If you want to know more about us, and we obviously want to know about you, you can either walk outside of these doors and talk to the people at our guest service center following the service, or you can text the number on the screen here. If that's easiest for you, just type in the word guest to that particular number. That's going to put you in a queue that we can follow up with you and try to get you connected to what's going on. So I'm glad that you are with us this morning. The other announcement I have for you today is just a couple weeks from now, we're going to be doing our annual Trunk or Treat event. It's our chance to have our community in our building. We thought it went very well last year doing it inside versus outside. And so we're going to be providing all the candy this year. But one thing we need from you guys is to either help volunteer for the event. You can do that by either being a greeter or an usher or helping out with the kitchen. Or you can sign up to do a table and join one of the themes that we have out here by the fireplace area. There's a nice big pub table and there's a sheet there. We'd love to have you come and participate and just have a fun that night. So that's October the 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. So please check out that sign-up sheet. Well, today I get to introduce you, if you have not met Tracy Furnival. He's with the Bakers Youth Club down in Warsaw. They also do some work up here in the Wawasee area. And so Tracy, since some in the building, it's been a whole year since we had you back. Would you just tell them a little bit about you and about Bakers Youth Club and what you guys do?
Yeah. So, Tim, thanks for having me back. I'm always super grateful and honored to come and talk about Baker Youth Club and the impact that we have on our kids and our community. And BYC has been around since 1926. We're going to be entering our 96th year here pretty soon, and we're pretty excited about that. I've been with the organization. I grew up at the club as a young boy. I can remember walking over the hill at the old Madison School and walking down to the old Retired Tigers where the club was held, and spent many nights there as a young boy growing up, and been very fortunate to be the executive director now for 18 years. So Baker Youth Club, our mission is to work with the youth of Kosciuszko County to shape an educated, healthy, and social identity based on Christian values. So we work extremely hard to teach kids wrong from right, be respectful, you know, make good choices, all those things that come with that. And we do that with our three pillars of education, health, and social skill building. So we run before school and after school programs, and we run a summer camp where it's all about being healthy, making good life choices, healthy choices. We do specialized reading programs. Every child gets a free snack and a juice after school. They get a free dinner Monday through Thursday. So we're just trying to give these kids an opportunity that they may not have anywhere else.
Yeah. I know last year, and you shared this last service, but COVID impacted you guys, so your numbers were a little bit lower. Volunteers weren't allowed to be in the building. But so what does that look like this year? What are some of the things that people can either volunteer with or just the things that you'd want them to know?
Yeah, so as we all know, it's been a pretty interesting, difficult year and a half with everything going on. Numbers were down pre-COVID, as way I call it. We were about 220 kids in our after-school program, about 75 or 80 in our before-school, and probably around, 50 or 60 in our summer camp. This past summer, we set record numbers in our summer program. We went to about 100 kids a day. Our before school has creeped back up to over 90 kids in the morning, and our after school numbers have creeped back up to about 180 right now. So we are slowly working our way back to the numbers that we like to see. We did lose all of our volunteers last year. As you know, people weren't allowed to come in the facility. Our goal last year, the biggest challenge and our biggest need we thought was these kids are stuck in homes. When they couldn't go to school and they couldn't go anywhere, these kids were stuck in homes. It's not a healthy environment. And our organization, our board of directors, made a strong effort to get our facility back opened up. So we were able to open June 1st because we wanted those kids out of those environments. We wanted them to have that safe and healthy place to come and not be stuck in an environment that's not good. So we were not allowing volunteers in. So right now we are allowing volunteers in, and we're very excited about that.
Tracy, tell us a little bit, this particular year, what are some of your great needs for the program, either at the facility or elsewhere?
Yeah, so always, this is my generic answer, is monetary. Everybody needs money, right? Every not-for-profit needs money. But more importantly, the way I look at it is we need volunteers, and I think this is a struggle all throughout our community, is staffing. Right now, we can't even open our Wawasee program, the elementary program at Syracuse Elementary, because I have no staff. We were able to just open up our middle school program, but we're still struggling there. We staff about, at Warsaw, 7 to 8 adults, about 6 or 7 college kids, and about 5 or 6 high school kids. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle someday. So our biggest need right now is staffing. Anyone looking for a job? Jordan, you know, soccer season over yet?
Not yet.
Well, that's a good thing for you. Good thing for you. But we need staffing, and we need volunteers. The way we utilize our volunteers are through meal programs. So, like I said, we serve a meal every night, Monday through Thursday. We have many different organizations that come in and provide that meal for us once a month, and that's an opportunity for a small group or a church group to get involved. Also, volunteers I love to use as one-on-one with kids. Many of our kids are seeking that attention and that need of someone just to listen to them. And we're not a one-on-one program. You know, with 180 kids and only 17 staff, you can't be one-on-one. So anytime we get volunteers in the building, I'll identify 5 or 6 kids and just say, hey, watch this child, or latch onto this kid, play some checkers, shoot some baskets, and be there and listen to that child. So we'd love to utilize volunteers for that one-on-one mentorship. So if anyone's ever looking for an opportunity to get plugged in, we have many opportunities at Baker Youth Club.
And so obviously, at the end of service today, they can come and talk to you about those opportunities or share contact information, or you have a website as well, Baker's Youth Club, they can check out. But Tracy, tell us, you know, if somebody were to be down at the facility, I know that they would be impressed by what you're doing there. And then even as you try to get up the Wawasee stuff, but tell us what some of your future goals or dreams are for the club.
Yeah, so it seems like every year or two, I try to chew off something new and exciting. I keep telling myself that this is the year I'm just going to write my grants. I'm going to hang out with the kids. I'm just going to do my normal thing. And I always start thinking about what if. Well, what about this opportunity? Well, what about this? And I find myself engulfed in a major project. And sometimes my board doesn't appreciate that, but I like to think outside the box. Our biggest goal right now, we were just fortunate enough this past year to complete a capital campaign, 3 capital campaign projects, without doing a capital campaign. We're so blessed to live in this county and this community that funds our programs to the tune of about $500,000 a year. I didn't want to have to go ask them for an HVAC unit, for a new parking lot, to repair our roof. So we were able to complete those this past year with all grant money. My next goal is I would love to put in a playground area in the back of our facility. We have no outdoor space for the kids to play in, and I think that's a great opportunity to keep kids healthy and active outside. So that's something that we're hoping by spring of 22, I have a nice playground area for the kids to play in, is something that we're looking at doing right now.
You know, you said that in the last service, and I thought spring of 2022, it's right around the corner, it feels like. So, again, that big dream is going to need some big action and big support, too.
That's why my board tells me that I make the big bucks, but I would disagree with that.
Well, Tracy, is there anything else that you would want our church to know about Baker's before we wrap up today?
Well, I think it's important, and this, you know, my passion is kids. That's why I get involved in Baker Youth Club. I coached at Warsaw for nearly 18 years, so my passion is kids. My second passion is talking to the community, talking to folks like you, who probably don't know the impact that BYC is having on our kids and our families. When I look at my registration portal every day, I see the number 300 and some kids registered. But to me, the other number I see is 211 families. We have 211 families that we're impacting with the before school, after school. These parents, working parents, tough situations, need an affordable place for their kids to go, and we're providing that. And with the education, the healthy lifestyles, the social interaction, we are making an impact. And I just hope everybody maybe sees that, check out our website, and I just want you to know that we are making a difference in these kids' lives. And that's because of investments that we received last year from the church, and blessed to have the support that we do in this community.
What do you think, Tracy, for being here today?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
The next guest that I want to introduce you to, she probably doesn't need an introduction to most of you today, but this is Becky Rassi, and she is with the Rose Garden Recovery Community. I don't want to tell too much of her story, but only to say her plan wasn't originally to be the director, but she jumped in because there was a need. She was on the board, and that eventually led to being the director. And so real blessed to have her here today. So it's been a couple years since we've partnered with the Rose Garden, and so I think it'd be helpful, Becky, if you just tell a little bit about yourself, how you got involved, and what are some of the things that the Rose Garden does in our community.
I've been a church member here for about 12 years, and was praying about, a lot of my ministry was church people, and I was praying to rub shoulders with more people in the community and be able to share what I have with others that may not know about Jesus. And so I was praying about that, and a friend of mine was on the board and invited me to a pancake breakfast at the Rose Garden, which is a mile and a half from my house. So I went to the breakfast and learned about the beautiful Rose Garden is a substance abuse recovery community for women. So women come to us, they don't detox with us, but they are very closely out of recovery. They are just barely clean, and then they come to us and start learning how to be, they start healing. So I was prayed to the Rose Garden. I believe very much that everyone, staff, volunteers, and residents come to the Rose Garden because God has a plan to do something big in their lives. We have 16 acres. We have two homes. One is our recovery house, which is the White House here. There's 16 acres. There's trails. It's a beautiful little retreat where deer and wild turkeys roam, and so women come to us off of the street. Nobody comes to recovery because life's going well. So they are broken. We have all kinds of women, pastors' daughters or girls who've only ever known addiction because their mom threw them in the back of the car and smoked pot to get them to go to sleep when they were babies. I mean, we have it from all different ranges. And so when they come to us, they are looking for hope and they are ready to change. And so they come to our recovery house, and it's a 9-month program. While they're with us, when they first come, we're all about protecting. They don't have cell phones, they don't have cars, they don't have jobs for 2 weeks because we are helping them to just focus on healing for a little while. They do need to get a job after a few weeks with us, but while they're with us, they're taking courses on boundaries and conflict management, and they're learning about their addiction and what type of trauma, I mean, why they keep going back and what that does to their body. And it's a 5-level program. It's 9 months long. If they work the program really hard, it can get extended a bit if they need longer to be there and to work through things. We are trying to unite women back with their families for them to build trust. Their families can come see them every Sunday from 12 to 5. And so we approve the support system that can come and be with them and pour into them. And then after they are gaining health, and they can't have their cell phones, but they can utilize the house phone and always connect with their healthy support system. And then after they're there for a while, each level, we have 5 levels. So every level, they're gaining a little bit more independence and trust. They're building trust with our community. They're building trust with their family. They start, after they've been there for about 2.5 months, they can drive to work and back. They get a cell phone that is monitored. They get to start taking visitation home. They get, you know, passes. And as they earn trust, they keep getting more and more freedom as they get more and more health. We're a nice balance from some of the different, there's a lot of recovery, I mean, not a lot, not nearly enough recovery houses, but there's a whole range of recovery houses where some are just sober living, where they live in community with drug testing, and that's their accountability. We do regular drug testing as well, and then there's other recovery houses where they don't leave for 9 months. They're very much there just getting all kinds of classes and teaching. And so we are a middle-of-the-road balance, and we are faith-based, and we are very much trying to empower them and give them, build muscles for them to go out and be productive members of society, but sustainable recovery to us is all about Jesus. And so everything, they don't have to be a Christian to come to us. We don't force them to be Christians while they're there, but they have to agree that everything they're going to be taught is going to be coming from this perspective that Jesus is the saving, sustainable recovery that they need. And I came because I found the Rose Garden. I came onto the board. The director at the time was young and energetic, and she had built this phenomenal program that the women still do today. We've tweaked some things, and we've had graduates pour into, ooh, this would be better if you moved it around this way. I mean, we've tweaked some things, but she built a really strong program. But she was young and ambitious and doing way too many things. And so when I came on the board, I am a crisis intervention specialist personality. I come beside. So I came beside and was praying over her, and I prayed, and we hired people, and I prayed her right into health, and she decided to stay home with her kids. So at that time, we needed a director, and I stepped in fully not intending to be a director. I was in transition. It was right when COVID hit. It was a wonderfully hard, awful time that God taught me a lot about myself, and we hired somebody else that ended up not working out, and the house needed stability in that time. I became the board president. Like, there was all kinds of stuff, and since I was board president, that's when I took over the house when she stepped down. All this to say that I never planned on being the executive director, but God has us do things we don't think we're supposed to do, and then makes it very clear that we're right where we're supposed to be.
Yeah. So, Becky, when we first came across the Rose Garden many years ago, it was just this house. And so you guys acquired that house several years ago, and both properties are paid off. So that's a huge blessing for you guys. But tell us a little bit about some of the current needs for the Rose Garden and maybe how people can get involved to support the work you're doing.
As far as needs, well, first of all, I didn't talk about the graduate house much. It's a transitional housing. So once you graduate from any kind of recovery community, you can move into our transitional graduate house, which is much more independent. You have lots of freedom, but you still are signing up for some accountability. You have regular case management a couple times a month. You get drug testing. But women with felonies have a hard time getting places to rent sometimes, or transition. So many people go through recovery and feel wonderful and strong and then go back to unhealthy living situations or unhealthy families. So we keep people in our community as much as possible and try to build those muscles even longer. It takes a couple years for a brain to properly heal, or to really start beginning to heal from addiction. So we try, you know, we want to provide that transitional housing, and that house is on State Road 13. It's the one that a lot of people think of as the Rose Garden. The recovery community is about a mile and a half to 2 miles from the community center, Lakeside Park. So, but nobody knows it's really there because it's hiding, and we like it that way. And then as far as needs, you know, any not-for-profit, we are dependent on donations to, I mean, our staff is almost covered by what the women have to pay to be there, but that doesn't cover maintenance and projects and facilities and, you know, just groceries. So there's so many things that we need that we are fully dependent on donations for. I am in need of a part-time staffer or volunteer to help with grant writing, and I mean, there's just any type of skill that a volunteer would have. One of our levels is all about discovering hobbies and things that you like to do, because our girls don't know what to do with their free time. What do you do for fun? I did drugs. I don't know. You know, so we need volunteers. If you have a skill or a craft or something that you, if you teach yoga or you go on bike rides or like things that you can pour into the women. If you love to cook, some of the women can't cook when they come. So we use volunteers. If you're a man and you want to do maintenance, you know, we have door hinges that go. I have no maintenance crew. My husband is my voluntary maintenance crew, and he would love for you to volunteer. So But we, you know, and we have women that don't have driver's license when they first come because either they don't, but they also aren't allowed. They get coworkers to drive them to and from work, but we need volunteers to pop over to the Rose Garden and take a girl to go get her medication at CVS. If you live nearby, it may be 10 minutes of your life, and you become that person's support, and you get to pour into them and learn about them. And so we need some volunteers. We need donations. We have a lot of big projects that I would love to do, but God's timing is perfect all along.
One of the things you did mention in last service was with the graduate home, I believe it has the unfinished basement, essentially.
Yes.
That it's got some furniture pieces. It's not super homey, but you'd like to turn that into more of a homey, comfortable atmosphere.
Yes. We have women, when they go to the graduate home, can bring their children at certain levels and ages. I mean, we can't have 15-year-old boys and girls living together in the graduate home necessarily, but we have, like right now, we have a girl with an 8-year-old boy that lives with her. So we have family that live there. We have 12-step meetings that meet in the basement twice a week, and we want a comfortable environment. But it's a basement. It's got a kitchen in it and some couches, but we could use carpet and drywall and things to make it that our graduate home, if there's kids living in the home, there's also women who don't want to live with kids. So we want to make that basement a safe space for kids to roam and play and have fun, where the other women don't have to necessarily go down there if they don't want to hang out with the kids. So that is one of the pressing projects that is coming up.
Yeah. And I'll let you tell the story that you told last time, but I just want to let them know. When you go talk to Becky today, she has a volunteer application. There are some volunteer opportunities out there. And so please take a moment to talk with her after the service today. But tell us, the one story of life change. I know there's other ones, but the one you told last service, I think, is very impactful.
And also, when you come out to talk with me, we have an event on November 9th. If you want a bunch more information, we're going to have testimonies and all kinds of stuff. You can come talk to me and give me your email, and we'll contact you about that. But one of the questions Tim asked was, what type of changes have you seen, or do you have a story of change or impact? And there's too many to talk about. But one woman, her story just speaks loudly. She came to us. God called her to us. She wrecked her truck where she was living out of her truck. She's from a different state, was dreaming about cornfields, and drove to Indiana, wrecked her truck 5 minutes from us, and was stuck in Indiana, and God worked everything out perfectly for her to end up in our facility. And she came, and the first day she was there, she was looking at people, and she saw one girl that was just so full of joy. And her instinct, when she looked at her, she said, well, bless her heart, she's high. Because she only ever saw people acting like that when they were on drugs. And so then, after she was with us for a number of weeks, she was walking down the driveway, and she had a panic moment because suddenly she felt high. And she was like, I haven't done anything. What's wrong? And she realized it was joy. And this woman's story, to the fact that she's even walking and breathing, is amazing. She left her home at age 12 because it was safer to be on the streets than it was to be in her home. Like, joy was something that she did not remember. And she called her son that night and said, joy mimics meth. Like, I felt joy today, and I thought I was high. And he said, no, mother, meth mimics joy. And that was, I mean, that is what we are doing. When people experience Jesus in safety and community and love, their lives are changed, and they have hope, and they see what they can have for their future.
Well, and that story, gives us a certain amount of joy, but I also know that not every story is successful either. And so I've always thought that the Rose Garden, it's a super tough job because there's not always wins. There are the failures too. And so it's our pleasure to partner with the Rose Garden today, and I appreciate the work that you're doing there. So would you thank Becky this morning for coming to share with us? Thanks. All right, the last organization we're going to interview this morning, two people that you may not know, maybe one looks familiar because he's our sheriff, but Kyle Dukes and Courtney Jenkins. Courtney is the director for the Kosciuszko County JCAP program, which is Jail Chemical Addiction Program. And so I'm going to let them tell. Obviously, they know much more about the program, but Courtney is the director. So Courtney, would you tell us a little bit what JCAP is and how you got involved with the program?
JCAP is a four-month recovery program housed inside the Kosciuszko County Jail, and our inmates apply to be in the program. They attend 6 to 8 hours of classes each day, and those classes are led by about 30 different community organizations or individuals that believe in what we're doing and have decided to donate their time and services. Some of our classes we pay for. We pay for our mental health services. 50% of their programming is what we call mental health based. It's led by a master's level clinician, and they do classes like moral recognition therapy and matrix, and they do individual counseling sessions every week, each participant, because it's really important for them to be able to process through the things that they're dealing with through the classes, but also they have homes and they have families, and there's a lot that goes on that is out of their control while they're in jail. And so giving them the opportunity to speak with a counselor on a regular basis, somebody that they trust and know is going to be there for their best interest, is really important. So in addition to that, they do 50% life skills classes, and they participate in parenting classes and finance classes. We work really hard to bring in classes that are going to help contribute to their success once they leave the program. Overall, all of our classes, we work really hard to just build self-esteem into our participants. Addiction really steals their self-worth. And so when they come to us, they're pretty broken, and they want better for their lives, but they don't think they necessarily deserve better. And so when we have community members that come in and donate their time, even if they're being compensated, they're just so passionate about what they're doing and the classes that they're teaching that our participants, they feel that. They feel like they're worth the time. They're worth someone's effort to come in. And so we do, getting back to it, they do the life skills classes. One of the really great classes you had asked me about last time was their job readiness class. As part of that class, at the end of it, we have about 10 to 12 local businesses that bring their either hiring manager or their general manager. Sometimes it's the business owner that comes in and helps us with our mock interviews. And that's it's such a great day. For me personally, I'm always thrilled with it because we purchase interview clothes for all of our participants. So they have on their nice khaki pants and their collared shirt, and they have a resume in hand, and they have their certificates from their logistics class and their serve safe class, and they're prepared. They know how to answer the hard questions. And they get to sit down across from people who actually know how to interview people. And they get to practice the skills that they've learned. And then they get feedback from the interviewer. Things like, you know, make sure you're making eye contact, or sit up straight in your chair. Just different things like that that help them so that when they leave the jail and they're ready to get a job, they feel confident going to that interview. In the beginning of the program, before we did our mock interviews and before we had our job readiness class, I had someone say to me that they had had an interview before they came back to jail. They were trying to put their life together, and they actually had an interview set up, and they panicked ahead of time because they didn't know what to wear. They didn't know how to answer the questions, and so they didn't go. And so we see that with a lot of different things. They don't know how to go to the bank and set up a checking account, or they don't know how to even go into an apartment complex and request an application. They just don't feel confident enough, which, if I can just take one more second,
sure,
leads me to another part of the program that Sheriff Dukes actually had suggested that we do to things, actually. First of all, we set up a mentor program because what we saw was as they left the jail, they really made an effort to stay in contact with our class instructors and with us. But we wanted to be able to pair them with someone that they could really kind of turn to when they had questions, somebody that they could build that really strong friendship and bond with, and that would walk through those difficult times with them, but also share in their successes. And so we have a mentor program set up. And then the second thing that Sheriff Dukes thought was really important and that we were able to implement, and it's been amazing, we partnered with Fellowship Missions and their Addiction Recovery Hub, and they lead a family support group for us. And so understanding that a lot of our participants don't come from homes that necessarily understand addiction, or they understand it really, really well because it's a family thing. And so we bring the families in and we sit down and we talk about what is addiction? Why is it that your son has spent 6 months in jail and leaves and within 3 days is getting high again? Why does that happen? What can we do as family members to help set those boundaries and have good communication skills with them, and just helping to walk with the families through that so that when our participants leave, we're providing them with as much support as we possibly can.
I think you've answered this, but as I heard you talk last service, I wanted to ask, without oversimplifying the question, but what is the end goal? What's the vision here for JCAP? I know you're doing tons of stuff and just great stuff, but what is the vision?
Sorry. So as I said, we want them to feel like they have worth, like they deserve recovery and that they deserve a happy life. And we want to see them succeed in that way. We have past graduates that come back and talk with our current participants and encourage them. And when they see that it's possible, because that's something coming into the program, most of them are really skeptical. They don't actually think they can live a good, clean, healthy life. They kind of think that's for somebody else. But when we have past graduates come back and say, I go to work every day, and I have my kids back, and I'm happy, I'm involved, I still stay in contact with our instructors, and they're just so encouraging that you see the light kind of come on in the current participants, because they think, I knew him back on the street, I saw what life he led, and if he can do this, then maybe I can too. So that's the goal.
And I think, Pastor Tim, too, we have to acknowledge that addiction's real.
Absolutely.
And if you look at the Kosciuszko County Jail right now, we have 251 people incarcerated. 80% of those people are there for drug and alcohol-related issues. So to have successful programs like JCAP with a 56% success rate, you know, my opinion, that's what builds stronger, better, healthier, safer communities. That's what it's all about, too.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you shared that statistic. And I want to tell you guys about, if you go to the Kosciuszko County Sheriff Facebook page, they've created, a three-part series? Three-part video series, which gives you an in-depth look about some of the work that they do, and they interview several of the people in the program that have been in the program. And so it's definitely worth going to the page and just viewing those. But this gives us a brief snapshot. There's so much more that happens. But what are some of your big needs right now? I don't know if I asked you that the last service.
So I mentioned our mentor program, and actually after the last service, I was like, oh, I didn't mention that.
The mentor program, right.
We need mentors. We need people who are willing to invest not just a little bit of their time, but really a big piece of your heart, because they just need people to love them. Sorry. And so if you have time and you wanted to get involved with that, we do a little training. It's just an evening. Because as much as we would like to think that it's just this perfect thing, you could just come and mentor and everything would be great. And the reality is
relapse happens, and so we want to make sure that you are prepared for those things and know what to look for, and that you know the right boundaries to set so that you can most effectively help them, but also kind of maintain your sanity, because it can be a lot sometimes to walk alongside of someone because they are really insecure. And so we need mentors. And what that entails is you going to a little training, and then we invite you to come to the jail to meet all of our participants that are in the current group. We do a little meet and greet. We have some snacks. And then we play some games. And it's just fun. And then, generally speaking, you'll be able to, through that time, identify somebody that you just kind of connect with. You just kind of click. You know how it is. And then we'll ask the same thing from our participants. Who did you feel like you clicked with? And it's amazing. It always matches up. And then from there, we will help you set up some visits to come visit them at the jail, just maybe once a week, once every other week, write some letters back and forth so that you're starting to build that foundation of a friendship. And when they leave the jail, then that can continue. And it's an easy thing. It's not something that's scheduled as far as, you know, your time commitment to it. We just request that, you know, once a week, reach out to them, whether it's through text or sitting down for a cup of coffee or maybe grabbing some McDonald's, whatever it might be, just to be able to spend that time and give them that community connection.
And, you know, there's a lot of times that there's a lot of people that have never been in jail that are scared. You know, I don't know what it's like back there when they shut the door. I can't leave. What's that like? I get it. Come in, see what it's like, feel it, you know, be a part of it. We're there assisting you the whole way. But Pastor Tim, it's amazing how many people volunteer their time and go back there, and then on their way out, we'll stop in front of my office and say, you know what, Sheriff? I think I needed that more than them. Can I come back tomorrow? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. You know, that connection. You know, thank God we live in Kosciuszko County. We have an awesome community and volunteers and people, and it's working. It's working. So there's somebody out there right now that is doubting, can I do this? Yeah, you can. You can. And we need you. 56% success rate. That's we're blocking, or we're knocking the walls down of addiction. We're building better lives, but we can't do it without you. So, thank you.
And if I understood correctly, because this is now the third time we've sat together, the JCAP program is some kind of a newish type of model, if I'm correct, right? And so there's not really any like do it this way or do it this way. I mean, you guys are very much innovating and being creative and all that. So I think it's important for our church to know is, you know, Courtney as the director gets paid by the sheriff's office, and then they get a grant to help pay for some of the mental health, well, all the mental health services. But everything else is donation-based. Your time.
Everything.
Everything.
100%. We rely heavily on community time donations. The majority of our classes are actually donated services, which is amazing when you really look at it. Our program expenses really consist of a few classes, workbooks. We buy fitness equipment. We buy the interview clothes. There's just day-to-day, you know, we try to... The men and women do 20 hours of service for each group that goes through. They all have to do 20 hours of service. And so we do a lot of painting in the jail. The sheriff's office covers our supplies for that. But the incentives of, you know, the pizza during painting, because who doesn't eat pizza while you're painting and have snacks? Like, all of those types of expenses come from donations from the community, which is amazing.
Absolutely. I hope you've been blessed by just some of their story. Again, there's much more that they could share. I hope that you stop by and talk to them after service today, and just thank them for what they're doing. But if your heart's been moved today, I encourage you to sign up or get involved with what they're doing down there at the jail. So would you thank them this morning? Thanks. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, before we have the worship team come back for one final song, I don't want us to forget that we only interviewed three of our partners for time reasons. Last year, we had Randy Polson with Combined Community Services, and so we're partnering with them again. If you haven't had a chance to pick up a blue Be Rich food bag, which will be out this way, they'll be a benefit from us taking some of that food to them, and we're also partner with them financially. The other partner is Boomerang Backpacks, has been on our docket for several years because our team continues to feel like, hey, this need's always here. It's always going to be here. In fact, the need is getting bigger. And so one thing I want to let you know, we've done this the last couple years, is we provide an opportunity for our church to help pack some of those food bags on Wednesday nights. So beginning this next Wednesday night through the month of October, out here in the main lobby, if you want to volunteer and help pack some of that food, please join us for that. I do need you to sign up in advance. You can do that on the mobile app or the website, only because we have limited space. Or you can call into the church office. But that'll be happening from 6:30 to 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights throughout October for Boomerang Backpacks. And then lastly, next week I want to let you know or remind you that Brad Johnson, who's the director for Mission of Hope, will be here speaking to us, him and Pastor Jeff. And then in the near future, we'll be participating in the Numana food packing as well. Those meals will go to Haiti. So the band's going to lead us in one final song. I just want to remind you that our giving kiosks are still open, and then please consider picking up a food bag as well. So thanks.